The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold. Shugan Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our various programs, please visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from the Book of Serenity, case 60. Iron Grinder, Leo. The introduction. Nose high, each has a powerful appearance. Footsteps firm and solid. One may study old woman Chan. When you penetrate the ungraspable dynamic, for the first time you see the method of a true master. But tell me, who is such a person? Iron Grinder Liu went to Guishan. Guishan said, O cow, you've come. The Iron Grinder said, tomorrow on Taishan there's a feast. Are you going to go, teacher? Guishan lay down and sprawled out. The Iron Grinder immediately left. The poem. Success in 100 battles accomplished, growing old in great peace. Serene and gentle, who is willing to trouble, to contend? The jade whip and golden horse are idle all day. The bright moon and pure wind enrich a whole lifetime. So here we are in the early-ish part of our session. And I've been concentrating mostly during the Ango so far on the fascicle of Master Dogen's, and was my intention. I knew it was a little dicey to try and bring the faith mind and this fascicle together, and so I'm sort of waiting until the Ango intensive to focus on the faith mind so that I can concentrate in these talks on the fascicle of Dogen's. And here, this fascicle, this koan, I thought, sort of brings us into Dogen's teaching. And here we have Guishan, who is a 8th, 9th century Chinese master, and his disciple, Liu Tiemo, who we chant, whose name we chant each morning. And she was known in her time as being a very powerful teacher, a well-known teacher. She lived, it's said, very close to Guishan, just a few miles down the road. Thus, she could drop in and visit him, as she did in this koan. Footsteps firm and solid, one may study old woman Chan. Remember that being old in ancient China was revered. Was a sign of having lived long and having accumulated knowledge, and particularly as in the Buddhist world, to have spent so many years developing, refining. And so this koan also gives a little window into their relationship. And we chant every morning the names of the women ancestors who have been forgotten or left unsung. But knowing, so that we remember every day, all of the people, male, female, non-binary, who have been part of this Buddha Dharma since the beginning. You know, there are collections of records of teachers, short biographies, the transmission of the lamp is one, a very old text, which basically has, you know, quite a number of teachers within the Zen tradition, but there were scores and scores that didn't make it into the records. And then, of course, there were multitudes beyond that of practitioners. I came across the story of another young woman, Chao An, who was the niece of a high official in the Sung Dynasty. And from very early age, she wanted to become a nun and devote herself to Chan. And so she decided she wouldn't marry, wouldn't have children. And she studied with Yan Wu, who was the teacher who wrote all the commentaries for the Blue Cliff Record and compiled that. And once when he was teaching, she came to an awakening. And he recognized her awakening and said, you should go on to erase your views, and then you will finally be free. And so she responded to him in a verse. The pillar pulls out the bone sideways. The void shows its claws and fangs. Even if one profoundly understands, there is still sand in the eye. And the next day, when he was approaching his seat to give a talk, she stepped out of the assembly and gave him a nudge, pushed him. And he looked at her and said, when you see the strangeness as no longer strange, the strangeness disappears of itself. And the next day, he went to her house to talk to her. And she opened the door and yelled, such a yellow-mouthed little boy. And you say you're a teacher? And Yan Wu said, don't brag so much, lady. I've already recognized you. And she laughed. And then he came in and she served him tea. Old cow, so you've come. I take that as a term of affection. The footnote to that says, already they've met. She's coming to see him. Already they've met. Meeting the teacher. We come to meet the teacher so that we can meet the Dharma. And that's vitally important. When that gets confused, then our path becomes confused. In meeting the Dharma, it's, I think many people experience it as having a meeting something that is known before knowing. We hear a strange language that is somehow already familiar. We encounter teachings that we don't understand but somehow know are true, and that are not asking us to believe in them, to subscribe to them as doctrine, but they're just messages from within that are being sent out for anyone who hears. And so there's a kind of inexplicable affinity that we can experience and encounter in the Dharma, some kind of subtle communication that we don't know yet, we don't understand yet. It's like returning home before we'd realize we had wandered off and gotten lost. And when we come to meet the teacher, in a certain sense, has already met the student. When we realize Buddha mind, the only way we can realize Buddha mind is to encounter the mind of sentient beings. In realizing Buddha mind, we realize the Buddha mind of all beings. And so we come to meet the teacher, and we meet ourselves, we meet Buddha, we meet the Dharma, we meet a vast and empty sky. And bit by bit, as we meet strangeness that is no longer strange, that sense of strangeness disappears. Before that, in a sense, everything is strange. And we work so hard to make it familiar. And so, the iron grinder, she was given that nickname because she was known to be rather fierce. And so she would chew up students. So she comes to see her teacher, Guishan, who's in his room, and she says, and he says, old cow, so you've come. And she says, tomorrow on Taishan, there's a big gathering and feast. Are you going? And so here, embedded within this simple conversation, they're communicating something. Now, they already understand. They know each other. So why are they doing this? Why are they having this conversation? In the Vimalakirti Sutra, when the Buddha is finally able to get someone to go and visit Vimalakirti in his sickbed, who happens to be Manjushri, Manjushri comes And Vimalakirti calls out and says, "Welcome, Manjushri. You're very welcome. There you are without any coming. You appear without any seeing. You are heard without any hearing." And Manjushri replies and says, "Householder, it is just as you say. Who comes, finally comes not. Who goes, finally goes not. Why? Who comes is not known to come. Who goes is not known to go. What appears is finally not to be seen." So remember that the Tathagata, another name for the Buddha, is the one thus come. So when one comes and comes not, this is coming thus. And so what is that all pointing to? What is it that we assume is happening, that we take for granted is happening when someone appears, when a thought arises in the mind? It wasn't there a moment ago, and now it's there. Now it is. At some point, it will leave. And now something is gone. So underneath the surface of our mind, within our consciousness, what is it that what assumptions are we making about that which comes and goes? In Ten Directions, Dogen quotes Master Changsha, who says, "The entire world of the Ten Directions in a single eye of a monk." And we can take this, read this as a single eye of a student. He's speaking to a sangha of monastics. The entire world of the Ten Directions is a single eye of a student. You know, this whole fascicle, Ten Directions, from beginning to end, is just one ceaseless affirmation. One ongoing, unrestricted, unbounded affirmation. And he takes us through, just in case we miss that, takes us through all the different ways in which the Ten Directions is the Ten Directions. The entire world of the Ten Directions is a single eye of a student. It means the single eye of monk Gautama, the Buddha. The single eye of monk Gautama is, "I have the treasury of the true Dharma eye." Even if he had entrusted it to Ananda, the treasury of the true Dharma eye, it would be the single eye of monk Gautama. Corners and spots in the world of the Ten Directions are the objects of Gautama's eye. The entire world of the Ten Directions is one within the monk's eye. There are eyes that go beyond this, too. This treasury of the true Dharma eye is Shobogenzo. It is your treasury. In every generation, Dogen is saying, with each awakening, what is awakened is this single eye of the Buddha. And it encompasses this entire world, every corner, every spot. And there are eyes that go beyond this. There is more. And so Leo says, "Tomorrow on Taishan, there's a big feast. Are you going?" The commentary says, "See her with Guishan. When letting go, they both let go. When gathering in, they both gather in." And there are different ways in the teachings that refers to upaya, skillful means, different ways of teaching, different aspects of training. And so gathering in or rolling in is allowing the student, letting the student stand alone. There's no one to lean on, nothing to draw from. You're left standing alone in the universe. How else can the student discover that they already have what they're seeking? In letting go or rolling out, there's walking side by side, receiving the teachings, being instructed, finding support. When you penetrate the ungraspable dynamic for the first time, you see the method of a true master. It's like the more we practice, the more we can look back and understand what we've experienced with more understanding. than we could have in the moments when it was occurring. We can see how the teachings were there all along the way, guiding, supporting, pointing, trusting in us as students. In many ways, much more than we trust in ourselves. We can see how the teacher was guiding and pointing, sometimes stepping forward and offering a hand, sometimes invisible, unfindable, so that we could develop our own two legs, know for ourselves. And so sometimes we sit face to face, sometimes we sit side by side, sometimes student and teacher sit on the same seat, and sometimes the student sits alone, all to give the student vitality. And in that way, the student is and the teacher is not an ordinary relationship. You know, that word has lots of meaning for us because we have all kinds of relationships. So it's a dharma relationship. It's a training relationship. It's not first and foremost a friendship. The teacher is not first and foremost a guide, certainly not a parent, though they can express some of those characteristics. It would be more accurate to say, describe the teacher as a spiritual friend or guide or mentor, but even that, in a sense, begs the question, what is it? How do we turn towards the indescribable, ineffable Dharma? How do we hear its teachings? And so it's said in the teachings that we're, as students, should be much more grateful to our teachers than to the Buddha, because the teacher's here, right? The Buddha obviously made all of this possible. But my teacher was the one who was here. Right? If I had gone looking for the Dharma and there was no teacher, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here. Guisha and Tiemo have met countless times, countless times. The poem, he says, success in 100 battles accomplished, growing old in great peace. So there's the image of the cave of the dragon, going into the cave of the dragon. For me, that was the Doksan room, going into the cave of the dragon. But it also appeared in many, many different moments. And success in 100 battles is wrestling with the self, our karma, our mind, our willfulness, our resistance, our ideas, all for the purpose of today. The footnote to that line says, at peace in one's house, now enjoying one's work. And so when Tiemo said, are you going to go to this feast? He just lay down, sprawled out. What is that? Remember, the question she asked him was, are you going to go? And in remember Vimalakirti's words, in coming, there is someone who has not arrived. In going, there is someone who does not depart. Are you going to go, teacher? Is the question. He sprawls out and lays down. He uses his body to show his unconditioned mind, his manifestation of being in harmony with the world. In the commentary says, in the meeting of Guishan and Liu Tiemo, they didn't establish character or reputation. They didn't strive in danger and biased views. They were relaxed and easygoing, seasoned and mature. You know, why all these references to coming and going? The Dharma is always looking, examining at a much, much deeper level. Because that's the level at which we are functioning in the dark within our delusion. It's there, it's alive, it's vibrant, it's in each moment. but it's not clear. And so there are all these ways of pointing to what is taking place, what is occurring, that we would just pass by. Old cow, so you've come. We would just hear it's just an ordinary greeting. Are you going to go, teacher? A very ordinary question between friends. All the while, something altogether more significant is going on. When something appears, someone appears, we see. Right? We see them. If it's a person, their name comes to mind. If it's someone we know, we recognize them. They're familiar. Right? If it's a stranger, then we don't yet have a name, but we give them all kinds of names anyway to describe the different characteristics and attributes. And in that first instant, we begin to build up a composite, a sketch, a representation of something that's alive and dynamic, that is the 10 directions encompassed in that very being. And those are all the subtle aspects of, like, our brick and mortar that we use to build the sense of someone, something that has come, that is over there. We open our eyes and we see someone out there. And they're approaching the place where you are in there. And so naturally, as someone approaches your fortress, your castle, your home, your property, your place, you want to know, are they a friend? Are they a foe? Are they going to help you or hurt you? Are they you? Or are they not you? It's kind of interesting to think about people that we care about. Children, parents, family, friends, lovers, people we respect, and how the closer we feel to them, it's as though we sort of allow them into our field, our domain. We give them entry. And in that, are we relaxing that sense of self? And in a sense, allowing to become part of something larger that is not so fixed? Or are we actually just reifying them into our sense of self, admitting them into some of our ways of identifying ourselves? In the poem, it says, serene and gentle, who's willing to trouble to contend? And I think in the commentary, in the poem, in the pointer, he's pointing a lot to, in a sense, this relationship and the dynamics of that relationship, of what happens between us, what happens in training. Serene and gentle is who is willing to trouble to contend. Is anyone, are you, willing to trouble to contend? Willing to be troubled to face suffering? Your own? Another's? The great heart of compassion is the one who is able to hear. And more, as that heart is unbounded, is able to hear and respond without being troubled. It's not trouble. And how to do that without creating the very harm that we're trying to alleviate. The footnote to that line says, not contending with people is not stupidity. Who is willing to trouble to contend? The footnote says, not contending with people is not stupidity. Is this a contradiction? The Buddha said, I don't argue with the world. The world may argue with me, but I don't argue with the world. Selfless compassion is like this. There's one of the early koans that says, I allow you to yell at me, to spit at me. What is that? Not contending with people is not stupidity. It's not apathy or passiveness or uncaring either. What is selfless compassion? Who comes, finally comes not. Who goes, finally goes not. Who gives, finally gives nothing. Who receives, receives nothing. In one of the Oxfording poems of the 10 Oxfording portraits and verses of the path, it says, astride the ox, I reach home. The dawn has come. No, sorry. Astride the ox, I reach home. I am serene. The ox, too, can rest. The dawn has come. In blissful repose within my thatched dwelling, I have abandoned the whip and ropes. So that's the seventh stage. And so it's depicting where the struggle has ended. The journey hasn't ended, but the struggle has ended. Thus, the whips and ropes can be abandoned. But what is that struggle? What is it that we are struggling with? I am serene, and the ox too can rest. The ox is the self. The great way is not difficult. Just relinquish all of your grasping and rejecting. Be neither for or against anything. Don't set up what you like against what you dislike. How many ways it's said over and over again, pointing to the struggle. And in that very pointing, making it clear, it doesn't have to be this way. This points to the realized mind and body, the serene and blissful repose, which is our practice all the time. When we talk about practice, that's what we're practicing. The misunderstanding of that is to think that means I am supposed to be in a state of blissful repose right now. And I already know what that looks like. Right? I have an idea of it. And when we try to sort of put that idea on ourselves, like make it like a suit of clothes that we step into, that just never goes well. Because it's not true. And it will never be true. And so it's in the moments of struggle that we are learning how to practice serenity, which doesn't necessarily mean being serene in that moment, but it does mean learning how to meet that without the whip and ropes, or with a set of whip and ropes that you may not recognize. Because we do need ways to work with this wild and woolly self. The resistance, the rebelliousness, the defeatism, the arrogance, the insecurity. I mean, if we pay attention long enough, we will see ourselves skating along the whole spectrum. Thank goodness we don't act out of all of it. But we visit many, many different realms. And so within the struggle, how to find our peace? Hong Zhu said, upon attainment, calculations are naturally forgotten. When in action, no effort is wasted. And that's why in practice and training, Zazen and Sesshin and Ango, there can be a lot of struggle and a lot of exhaustion, right? Because we are applying a lot of effort, but it is and will be, and in a sense must be, often not used very wisely because we're finding our way. And so we're using what we have at hand in ways that both are very familiar. Those are all of our old habits. And in new ways, new paths that are being forged. but that are wobbly, not confident, not clear. And so Guishan lays down in response to this question. And his disciple, Iron Grinder Liu, just leaves. And they know each other. They understand because they have gone through those many battles, those many struggles, growing old in great peace, because they were willing to trouble to contend. And are still, it seems. Dogen quotes Changsha again, who said, "The entire world of the Ten Directions is the whole body of a student." He means your body, your whole body. Not the body you received from your parents. This body, this whole body that is the Ten Directions, is unborn and undying. And it's not set up against your 20 or 30 or 50 or 70-year-old body. It stands against nothing. It is the entire world of the Ten Directions. And we need to discover that within this body and mind, this psychophysical body. That's why practice has to be, we meditate in this body and mind, in this posture, facing this mind, experiencing all of the things that arise within this body and mind. Because it's only in that way that we can realize all of this is not you. It is not to be possessed. It is unborn and undying. And now, in that blissful repose, we can live within this physical body which is aging and getting ill and dying and be at peace without grasping. And so it's this body, this karmic body, that gives us a vessel from within which we can raise bodhicitta. We can establish our intention. We can begin to settle our mind and turn towards and see clearly into our karma. We can experience directly and painfully the effects of our attachments. And we can experience directly the release of those attachments. It's in that body that we can give voice to the teachings, that we can direct our attention, that we can see all of the signs of practice occurring. And when we are practicing on the true path and when we're not, all of this is this body in the Ten Directions. And in that way, we see that every grasping, every constriction, every turning against creates the sense of someone appearing, coming. And in that sense of someone, someone has come and someone has arrived. And so the trouble has begun. And so Hongzhi is really asking us, am I willing to trouble myself to contend with myself, with yourself, with all of the many selves? He's asking, are you willing to allow yourself to let go, to have faith, to trust, to actually allow yourself to come to rest, to meet your 10 direction whole body? You know, if we're not, to the degree that we're not willing to contend, we tend to assign that essential work to others. You do it. And not so much the examination and practice and realization, but the consequences of my not doing it. When I don't do it, when I don't take the trouble to contend with myself, I put that trouble onto others. That's why Kanon Bodhisattva is so heroic, because she's willing to do that. She's willing to take on that trouble. You know, we might think that all the things that weigh us down and that hold us back, that we just can't wait to let them go. That we'll be the first ones to relinquish. But to think, to reflect on and to observe how when we experience things over and over and over and over and over and over and over, infinite numbers of times, patterns, ways of thinking, ways of speaking, ways of reacting, ways of experiencing in this body our lives, in the repetition, the endless repetition of those experiences, we create a sense of someone, we create a sense of identity, but we create the particulars of how that someone is in this world. And so what we find is that we're often not actually at the moment of release, at the moment of relinquish. We're not always actually so willing to do that. If I let go of this, then who am I? What am I? What will fill that space? You know, when we think about all the time that we can give to certain patterns, what am I going to do with myself in all of that time and space? Now, of course, this isn't necessarily a conscious thought, which just shows it how deep and embedded it is. But we can observe that in moments where we are right on the precipice, right at the threshold of a small letting go or a large letting go, and we pull back, or we let go of something, put it down, and then immediately run after and pick it up again. And that's just showing us the familiarity and the comfort within that. And that's why we have to return to that very place again and again and again and practice that relinquishment over and over until it becomes serene. It's not a struggle anymore. Master Dogen says that this whole body penetrates the entire 10 directions, and it does so without disturbing the entire 10 directions. It doesn't disturb anything. It takes up the student's body of the 10 directions and sees the student's body and mind of the entire 10 directions without measuring. Measuring is not required. The universe is not disturbed. This whole body is inseparable. And therefore, there's no question of worthiness or perfect or imperfect or ready or not ready, or is this the right time or not the right time? That question only arises in the mind. The old master said, the ordinary eye cannot see the pervasive Buddha body. The ear cannot hear the pervasive Buddha body, the body of the 10 directions. Speech cannot describe this pervasive Buddha body. The mind cannot imagine it. Which in a way is great. It's giving us permission to not have to try and create an image, a sound, a word, a description. He says, even if you can behold the entire great earth without missing a trace, still, this is only halfway. Within its boundaries, the sun and moon are suspended, the universal clear emptiness, the endless source of spring. It's another way of describing this blissful repose. It's another way of describing you. The bright moon and pure wind enrich a whole lifetime. A footnote to that line of the poem says, enjoyment of them is inexhaustible. It's inexhaustible because we're not creating it. When we manufacture, when we have to create and produce our contentment, our fulfillment, our peace, that cannot, by definition, last a lifetime. It can last a few moments. Only that which is not created, not produced, that doesn't come and go. And so at whatever stage of practice you are, when you sit down on this seat, this diamond seat, and you take up this wisdom practice of Zazen, you are entering directly into this great matter, the one who does not come, who does not go. You're gaining access to this bright moon and pure mind that enriches a whole lifetime. It just takes time, patience, urgency, perseverance, faith to discover it. But that's all good because you have all of those things. Everyone has these qualities. So when we really trust that, you know, as he said, it's beyond measure. It's without measure. You don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to manage your awakening. Please do not. It will wear your ass out. And at the end, you'll just be worn out. You'd say, well, I'd be willing to wear my ass out if I get it. It isn't like that. It isn't like anything. And so just reflect on how much easier and how much more energy you would have in your practice if you just gave up all of the judging and the measuring and the comparing. Just try it. Take a chance. You will see. You will see.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.